Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTPN's NBA podcast as we're getting ready for the 2017-18 season. I can't believe it's already here. We're already getting going with a lot of our previews for these teams, but we have a nice little crop that we want to discuss, mostly Western Conference teams, spoiler alert, but a lot of things to discuss. So I'm bringing in my co-host, Adam Murray. Adam, what about this one? We're not going to reveal them yet. We're kind of going to go like bit by bit, but do you kind of feel more intrigued by this group than maybe some of the other groupings that we've had?
Well, this group can actually play, and for some teams are exciting to watch as opposed to just the sad basketball that we'll be forced to watch with a lot of games.
I mean, like, well, Tankapalooza is always going to be on. Now, let me ask you this. You know, the more recent news that's come out in the last, you know, few weeks about the lottery system revamp, do you think that actually will lend to some of those bottom teams trying a little harder?
Well, nobody knows how they're.
And maybe we'll see those teams next year in this grouping.
Nothing is going to get done for the lottery reseeding because people have traded already their, you know, 2020 first round picks, and you can't say, well, we're going to change the way how your pick is now valued. So I think they're going to be fighting that, you know, to the end. It's just, yeah, things should be done. You know, that's why I know you're not a soccer fan, but in these soccer leagues, the bottom three teams get kicked out of the league for a year.
Yeah, it's called relegation.
Yes, they get relegated. So that would just be awesome. Be like, okay, Philly, you're just an embarrassment. Oh, we have the process. We're just going to be as bad as we can, and then we're going to get Okafor, and we're going to get Noel, and that's going to change everything. And no, like these teams, it's just sad. And then like NFL is doing it too with the Jets and the Browns of just.
The rumor I read was the Rams too. That the Rams. I'm not as in the know about the NFL as I am with college football. I've kind of drooled out of it a little bit in terms of desensitizing the NFL football. But I heard the Rams will be one of those teams kind of in the tank mode. I guess you could call it.
That's the thing. It's just like, you know, there's like every year there's a reason why I tell you, I'm like, I've stopped watching football, and it's just, well, this is it. Now that the teams are just saying, we're going to literally take hundreds of millions of dollars and we're going to put a shitty product on the field on purpose. Okay. No, I'm just going to.
Yeah. But that's the bottom of the barrel, which we've already gotten into. Now we're actually going up a few notches here after a couple of the ones that we've already chugged out for you for our NBA season preview, and we're going to be talking about teams that are right. I mean, you are like, by the time you get to the top of this crop, you're in the top 10. So, Adam, like when you look at these teams, I mean, if you look at it numerically, you know, one, because 16 teams make the playoffs in the NBA, even though it's 8 West, 8 East, not always balanced. You're looking at teams that will probably make the playoffs, almost every single one that we discuss, or the majority.
These are all the teams that are going to make the playoffs. These are just basically the have-nots. The tier above them is the spoilers. And this is just like, well, you guys are either A, too young, B, two moves away, C, just, well, you mismatched your salary caps. This is where you're going to be stuck at. This is just like the curious case tier of everybody has something a little off with them here.
Yeah, that's why I titled this one "Don't Tease Me, Bro," because I mean, does it feel like a lot of these teams are teases?
No, because they're not teases because there's just
"Don't Tease Me, Bro," "Don't Tantalize Me, Bro."
These are teams. We have a lot that are moving up. Couple that are moving down. These are teams just full of movement. These are the active teams that, you know, we've had, you know, just other teams like Raptors done nothing, who are way better than them. You have, let's say, the Pistons below them. Haven't really done well. They did a little, but okay, you know. But these teams are moving. They're movers and shakers.
I agree with you. I feel like this one, and then the tier below that we had discussed, that those are the kind of the teams, like you're saying, where some are moving up, some are moving down. It's sort of that meet me in the middle type of section where everybody sort of not all the teams are situated in the same sort of sequence where, you know, maybe you'll have more than one team in the same bracket that we're going to be discussing here where they're both building towards something. They're in year three of a rebuild, and it seems like things are looking up. And then you'll have a team that, like, we're going to talk about the Clippers in this one to tell everybody just on the outset is that you got teams that are just starting over almost. You know, they're not completely starting over because they have some good players to build upon to make a playoff team, but there's a lot of other question marks that have to be checked off. But let's just go ahead and get rolling. The Denver Nuggets, we're going alphabetical order here by city like we always do. The Denver Nuggets go first. Now, the Denver Nuggets won 40 games last season, and that's actually a shock. If I don't have the Vegas odds on over-unders last year in front of me, but I would have to bet Denver was somewhere around 29 or 28.
They were pretty far under last year, and it's amazing how that how they sort of did overachieve. And you watch the games; it's like, well, they're horrible on defense, and they can't make anything on offense. And yeah, it was a tale of two seasons, really. Once they got rid of Nurkic, and the Harris.
Now, to be fair, the Nurkic trade, while necessary, because. You know, you always talk about roster crunch. We talked about this a lot with the Orlando Magic and the – I can't even believe I'm saying this in past tense because it's already happened. But the old John Hennigan days where the Magic just had too many of the same people. And I felt like Denver had the same problem. The difference between Orlando and Denver was that Denver actually got better, whereas Orlando never did. But they had a roster crunch from position – one through five. And then at the five, you had Jokic, Nikola Jokic, who's going to be their blossoming star now, really come on. And basically, they had no room for Nurkic. So they had to move him in the trade deadline. But getting him in exchange and sending over a first-round draft pick with it in exchange for Mason Plumlee was a disaster.
Yeah, that sort of backfired. And, you know, the thing about Denver is they've really lost out on everything. And you sort of have to feel bad for them because they are, I think, the one team who's legitimately trying out there. They're the ones who made a press for Dwayne Wade. They're the ones who try to make a Jimmy Butler trade. They're the ones who try to, hey, Kyrie.
They tried to get Kevin Love. They thought they had Kevin Love.
Kevin Love, come here. Kyrie, come to here. Chris Paul, come to here. And everyone's like, no. Then the draft comes. Okay, we're going to trade down. We like a newbie. Oh, wait, Toronto just picked him one pick before us. It's just everything that happens to him.
OG Anunoby. That's the rumor that they wanted Anunoby, and he went a pick before, so they took Tyler Lydon.
Yeah, and they get Lydon, but you just traded for Trey Lyles, who's more or less the same player.
That was a dump. That was a Utah dump. I don't know if Utah just gave up on him, and maybe Denver just sees a little bit. Maybe they see a little bit of Darrell Arthur in Trey Lyles. You know, Darrell Arthur is not a spring chicken. His age at this point is at 29, so it's not like he's going to be lasting too much longer, even though they got him for at least another year.
Well, I think you're just trying to search for not the best player, but you're going to search for complementary pieces to Jokic.
Okay, but a lot of complimentary pieces almost repetitively for the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, like, and that's the problem.
For example, Gary Harris, Wilson Chandler behind him. Chandler's unhappy even though he played very well off the bench. He was third in scoring on the team. As a returning scorer, he's second now that Danilo Gallinari has signed with the Clippers. Gallinari was another situation where it's like, okay, if we bring in Millsap, Gallinari, we have number one, we don't have the room salary cap-wise to make this work because it would ruin our roster because we'd have to remove assets to bring them both back. And the fact that they kind of played the same position, so Gallo was gone. What do you think of the Gallo era in Denver?
Just filled with injuries.
But a very good, efficient offense.
He's very talented. He's very good. It's just he never was able to stay on the court. And, you could tell he was leaving. He's like, well, the reason I like Denver is they could give me 5 years. Nobody else can give me 5 years. I'm like, okay, he does not want to be there.
He was a cornerstone of the Melo trade back in 2010, correct?
It wasn't Mozgov.
Mozgov was like the last piece.
It wasn't Mozgov and the two firsts or whatever.
He was the GM of the Nuggets. Yeah, he wanted Mozgov to Mozgov was the cherry on the sundae. He wanted it done, and if not, he wasn't going to sign off on it. But Gallo, I remember, was always in the deal.
Yeah, he was always the because you're not just going to trade for garbage. But
yeah, Kenneth for Reed, and we already talked about Arthur. Juan Hernan Gomez is also a power forward. He played as a rookie, didn't play a lot of minutes, but they really, really like him. Jamal Murray kind of can play point guard, but Emmanuel Mudiay was drafted before him a year earlier, but Mudiay has really struggled to the point that Jameer Nelson was taking Moutier's minutes. Just a lot of repetitiveness, but just a lot of good, interesting pieces. I think you made a good point, though, that they just don't have a lot of depth at the small forward position. They have scorers, but they're not true wings. So do you think that bringing in Paul Millsap, which is really the main addition that they made other than their draft picks, I mean, Millsap's basically a power forward who can shoot and stretch and play defense, but he doesn't really do much for them at the three. So what is it that they're going to be able to do?
And that's, again, the problem is, okay, we got Lydon and Lyles, and oh, now we have Millsap, who's just going to take all those guys' minutes, and none of them are going to play because all they all can play the four. And oh, we got Fareed, who's also a four. Ah, crap. So you could either try to play small and just play Harris out there, and you know, Chandler will obviously start, but outside of that, it's just a very, there's no depth there, and there's nobody who can play there either.
I think player movement at the trade deadline is a must here. I mean, that's why I think a little bit of this is to be continued. Like, I think for Reed, I've been banging that drum on for Reed, even though the big hangup is that he has a contract that goes all the way to 2019 at $13 million a year, and a lot of people feel like he's damaged goods at this point. But you know, I think for Reed might get moved. I think Moutier might get moved. Do you, like, what percent chance would you put there that Moutier might be gone by the end of the season? Just a total give up.
Nobody wants him. That's the problem. Is he's has no value right now. As he's regressed to, you know, as much as I keep saying I want to like him, he's just terribly offensive.
Yes,
and you can't have a, you know, you can't just have like a negative point guard out there.
Okay, Mason Plumlee, because we're kind of like back and forth with the recordings here. Mason Plumlee signs the tender,
and nobody else is going to offer him anything.
I know a lot of people are kind of in that RFA situation where this thing might get extended all the way to right when training camp begins, because I think the deadline to sign the tender is the start of training camp. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes. And, you know, oh, there's somebody's going to make a deal. Oh, nobody's going to make a deal if you have Alex Len on the board and you have people like Tyler Zeller who's just sitting there free.
And then, well, the Nikola Mirotic one, which is kind of weird.
Well, that's just Chicago and their dumpster fire, but you have enough Big Ben players who are sitting out there, so it's just, you know, then you have Nerlens, who's like, nope, I don't want $70 million. I'm gonna be a max player. It's like, oh
yeah, he changed agents though. He realized that he not taking the 4-year $70 million deal, which was rumored, and not taking it. Backfired on him, because as an RFA he didn't get the same sweet deal that Otto Porter did, and when he realized that, he fired his agent, and the moment he hired his new one, which I believe is Rich Paul, he immediately signed the tender because he's going to take his chances in unrestricted free agency, which might backfire on Dallas, but that's a whole nother sidebar. Really good offense, like you were mentioning. Mike Malone really knows how to run that stuff. You remember they had that game against the Warriors where they just destroyed them with three-point shots and blew them out. Seventh in three-pointers made, third in scoring, first in rebounding, which, you know, because of the fact that they're such a fast-paced team, doesn't really surprise anybody. But their defense was just so awful. They were dead last in efficiency on defense. So Paul Millsap is their main addition. And he is a very good defender. That was his. That was one of his mantras in Atlanta. Do you think he alone, though, can really, like, how high can he really raise it up to? Like, what, 22nd?
Well, he alone makes his team better.
That's true. So, but can he make the defense better?
By default, yes, because no matter, you could have the best defensive unit, you could put on the all defensive team out there, and Golden State will still score like 120 on them. That's just the way the league is. You're just going to be shooting threes, and you're not going to stop them.
Did you like his contract?
3 years isn't bad. 3 years with a team option, so it's a 2-year deal.
Yeah, 3-year, 90, I believe it was. So if that's with a team option, the third year, that's actually that works to their advantage. The over under to finish here with the Nuggets, 45.5. you know, I get where Vegas is coming from, where they saw the drastic improvement between 16 and 17, where they went to from like an estimated 29 to 40. So they're kind of meeting in the middle, and they're going up to a five win improvement upon that one. But I don't know about 45 wins. Like, what do you say?
I would go the over on them because they went all the way to the end with the playoffs.
So you're buying Nugget stock. You're buying some gold.
This team has, you know, now that, you know, Logjam has sort of been freed with Gallinari, and it's just going to be the Gary Harris, Nikola Jokic show. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, they have a nice little burgeoning little team out there.
Yeah, and they got Harris that they're probably going to – I would have to think they're going to zip him up with an extension before the start of the season, huh? He'll be one of those that gets the rookie extension.
He should, unless, you know, he's irrational and all going to get a max deal, and it's just, okay, here comes the RFA territory again.
I always get excited about that. I mean, I remember when they had the Halloween deadline with the Oladipo and – who was the other one? Gorgui Dieng. A lot of really interesting ones that, after the fact, don't seem so great. Okay, let's move on to the Los Angeles Clippers. This is the one that I'm intrigued by, but then again, it sort of depresses me. It's not like Lob City was my favorite team. You know, they had a lot. There were a lot of things to be frustrated with when Chris Paul was with the LA Clippers, and they had that whole crew there with JJ Redick, DeAndre Jordan, Blake Griffin, Doc Rivers coaching the team and being the GM at the time. We'll talk about that in a second. Really good team. Got pretty far in the playoffs in 2015. They had the meltdown against the Houston Rockets that everybody is well known about. Lost to Utah Jazz in the playoffs in 7 games when Blake Griffin got hurt again. And then Chris Paul decided he was going to leave, but he gave he at least gave the blessing to LA that he was going to leave. So they engineered a trade to get some assets back instead of Paul walking away and opting out for nothing.
And that is sort of the amazing thing, is this team could have been completely decimated and been a lottery team, but instead they got back a pretty nice haul of prospects. And
I can't call it a one-sided trade. I mean, Chris Paul is one of the best point guards in the league for Houston. We'll talk about them eventually, but the return was basically, unless I'm missing some pieces here, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Sam Decker, who I believe is recovering from an injury, Montrezl Harrell, and was there a draft pick involved that they eventually traded in the draft?
Other problems, and there's a bunch of no-name players who got all shuffled around, and it was just a lot of movement around there. And basically, they traded for literally a whole bench when they had – all they had was Austin Rivers last year and you know, the corpse of Paul Pierce.
Yeah, they had Paul Pierce. Luke Mbamute had to start because of the fact that Wesley Johnson was so bad. You know, Mo Spates, Raymond Felton was the backup point guard. Just a lot. And you already mentioned Rivers. Just a lot of weird pieces. A lot of – not only Paul is out, but Redick left in free agency. And they basically dumped Jamal Crawford because they needed to make the cap space. Because even though they were losing Chris Paul's money and they didn't take on that much back in terms of percentage, they still had to pay out Blake Griffin because Blake Griffin was also an unrestricted free agent. So they didn't exactly have all the money in the world to work with, even though they were losing Paul. It wasn't like open season for them to just grab this whole new team, but they do have a whole new team.
They have a whole new team. However, that creates a lot of problems is now they have log jams. And it's all going to come down to the eyes are squarely upon Austin Rivers right now. What do you do with him? Because you have, you know, you give a lot of money to Milos Teodosic, who's, you know, EuroLeague legend.
Milos Teodosic is from, I believe he's from Serbia, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
He is well known as one of the best players out of EuroLeague in the last decade. But remember the word I just said, decade. This man is in, I want to say, what, 32?
No, he's 30.
Okay, 30 years old, but granted, but got a lot of mileage on him, played a lot of international competition ball for Serbia. They played in the final in the gold medal game, the Olympics, along with who's the other one? The one that's going to the Kings, Bogdan Bogdanovic?
Yes.
That was sort of his partner in crime. But yeah, Teodosic, he's well known as a fantastic passer. Can he play NBA level defense is a huge question.
And that's the thing is he can't play defense, but you got Patrick Beverley now, so you could play those two together. And then just, you know, Beverley takes the off, you know, takes the defensive match, but then plays the two. And okay, you're just going to funnel it down to the big men anyways. Okay, but then what are you going to do with, you have Austin Rivers and Lou Williams sitting there like, well, we need minutes too. And if you start Austin at the two, this team is kind of sunk already.
I think they're okay, though, at the forward spot, even though Blake Griffin, there's rumors that the broken toe is in, or the broken whatever. I don't know if it's the toe or the foot, that it's not healing as quickly as they wanted it to, so they're going to take their time with his recovery. But they did sign up. We just talked about Denver, and Danilo Gallinari had played there last year. Gallinari is signed with the Clippers. So it sort of works now where he can be the scorer in the front court while DeAndre can just be the rebounder, I guess you could say defender, even though I don't think defensively DeAndre Jordan is exactly a stalwart. But, I mean, Gallinari can at least relieve them of some of their ills.
Yeah, and that's the problem with this team is on paper, it's like, oh, man, these guys look good. How long's the season again?
82 games.
82? Oh, well, Well, they're not going to play all. They're not going to play 82 games. That's not going to happen. So it's just like, you know, again, with the same thing with Denver, like a move has to come. They have to free up some space somewhere. And if they start, you know, sucking early, maybe it's time to jettison Jordan, who is, I believe, is a free agent next year.
He has a player option.
He's a free agent next year.
Yeah, he's a player option. But he had $22 million. But, I mean, remember, that was the contract that was the harbinger of what I guess you could call it Banana Boat. I mean, it was an extension of Banana Boat, but Banana Boat was not, like, directly related. It just so happened to come out at the same time as the DeAndre changing his mind with the Mavericks fiasco. Outside of CP3, who will they miss the most? I'm just going to give you the names. Redick, Crawford, Spates, Felton, Emba Mute, Bass, Allen Anderson, Paul Pierce.
Oh, they're going to move. I think they're going to miss Redick more than they'll miss Chris Paul because they are not going to shoot any threes in this team. Mm-hmm. Milos isn't shooting threes. Patrick Beverley isn't known as an offensive stud.
Gallo's more of a mid-range dude, you know?
Yeah, so where are the threes are going to come from? Lou Williams.
Yeah. The other additions, I do like Sindarius Thornwell. He had gotten drafted in the second round. He led the South Carolina to the Final Four. Looked good in summer league. Big body. I think he'll actually play right away. I don't know the extent of Sam Decker's injury. To be honest, I didn't look that up before we started. But I heard it was a fairly serious injury. But Decker is a nice prospect, but he's had injury history in his, you know, already in his career. Even though he's a very nice player that came out of Houston. Juwan Evans will back up Austin Rivers just to show how thin they are at the point guard position, like you were talking about. They signed up DeAndre Liggins. Willie Reed is like a player efficiency basketball nerd favorite because it seems like every team he plays for, he makes him a little bit better. But I don't know if he's going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, his 13 minutes will make a dent in anything.
Well, Harrell is not like a great rebounder, which is bad because he's like a true center. Remember when Harrell had to fill in for Nene when the Rockets played the Spurs and he just got destroyed. So like, I'm not sure exactly what he can provide. But the one thing that's fun about the Clippers this year is that they are different. But they're not only different on the court, they're different in the front office because of the fact that – is it fair to say that Doc Rivers was fired as a GM but not fired as a coach? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he was fired as a GM. Which it was long overdue.
Michael Winger. Yeah, Michael Winger was he's like a cap aficionado from the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he's kind of slipping in. Nice sneaky move there by Lawrence Frank to kind of keep his credit there in LA because he was able to stay in the front office while Doc Rivers, who had brought in Lawrence Frank, got demoted back to just being the coach. I mean, do you think this is all this stuff with – and also I didn't even mention the Jerry West thing that happened when they were trying to re-sign Chris Paul because the rumor was they brought in Jerry West so that West could try to talk Paul into staying, you know, do that sort of words of wisdom type of stuff from a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that was the rumor, but then every time you heard Jerry West talk, he's like, yeah, we need to blow up this team.
Oh, so you think it was sort of like he was playing one hand but actually playing the other.
It seemed to be that way. It's, he's going to come in, he's going to, you know, do the horse whisperer thing, and then it was just like, he wasn't thrilled with the prospect of, you know, Paul and then Blake Griffin and literally having luxury tax payments, you know, forever.
I'm not looking at team stats. I'm not even I'm going to mention the number of wins. It was 51. The over under is 43.5. I think that's a little high. I think they're actually going to be under 40, and I'll go with the under here.
Oh, I just wussed out and I said push.
Okay, so you think 43 to 44.
Yeah, because if they get injured as we expect, okay, that's 40. If they can all play good and they're all healthy, oh, that's 48. So I'm like, let's just average it out and 40.
I'll say this: if Gallinari and Teodosic don't get exposed, I think this could be a very good defensive team.
I'll put it this way: if Gallinari and Blake Griffin stay healthy, Teodosic could be Rookie of the Year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because that means
the
they're going to be
ability alone with the lobs, and then
yeah,
he's
just going to have assist after assist, and just Lob City will be back, and then okay, there's no reason he shouldn't be in that talk then. But that's again, if they stay healthy, if everything comes up heads.
I think their offensive efficiency is going to dip, of course, without Paul, but it still will be good. I think their field goal percentage will always be good because of DeAndre Jordan always shooting, like, what, 70% because of all the dunks that he does. And like I said, new point guard, but I feel like Blake and DeAndre will find their easy baskets. And also Gallinari, like we mentioned, is a good shooter. The question I have is, can Doc Rivers channel that Boston Celtics – Ubuntu, whatever they call that, you know, defensive mentality again? I think that's what he needs to do. If he's able to do that with the Clippers, they might do something.
No, I don't think he's going to channel that because all his players are gone. Every year, what happened? Oh, I need Paul Pierce here. Oh, I need Brandon Bass. Oh, I need Big Baby Davis. I need my old players back here. And then it's just like, no, just... You know, here's a new team. Here's a new roster. Your new GM's got you a bench you've never had. So learn to use them.
Okay, now we're going to talk about the only East team of this crop, and that's the Milwaukee Bucks. A lot of favorites here with Milwaukee. What was their win total last year? I don't have it right in front of me. I'm just going to scan over here. 42. Now, they did that for the majority of the season without Jabari Parker, because Jabari – Parker tore his ACL once again, I want to say like January or February, which was a shame because Parker was really coming along. And there's also the potential that he's got the restricted free agency coming up next year, so they might have to sign him up by November. Do you think that'll happen? Let's just get that first with Jabari Parker.
No, because he wants the Otto Porter deal, and they're not going to give that to somebody who has two ACL injuries off the bat.
No, they have a new GM who has already been in the – he's been in the organization, but I don't have his name in front of me. But do you think that he'll really hardball Jabari Parker? This might be a guy who basically helped scout Jabari Parker, might be a favorite of his.
No, because they don't have money for him, really, if you want to add other pieces. And
well, you got Monroe potentially coming off the books at $17
million. Okay, yeah, you have him, but at the same time, like the same thing we said from last year, there's this mismatched roster of, well, these people have talent, they have skill and athleticism, but they don't have positions, and we're sort of going with positionless basketball for now, and that only gets you so far, and I think this is the year it sort of just the clock runs out on that.
Okay, I want to backtrack on the Parker thing, because when we talked about it before the show, you made a good point. They seem to actually find an identity and play a little bit better than they were earlier in the year without Jabari Parker, because they had to confine themselves to the positionless, let's kind of just throw shit at the wall type of offense. And it actually – they actually played their cards pretty – I got to give it to Jason Kidd. Sometimes when it came to the roster rotations, he would start Rashad Vaughn sometimes. He'd start Jason Terry sometimes. I wouldn't know what the hell he was doing. But it seemed like in the playoffs against the Raptors, he really bamboozled them a couple times. Threw in Thon Maker, who seemed to have show a lot of growth in the playoffs. The one that was disappointing was Mirza Teletovic, who was supposed to be a big signing, and he kind of made a fart noise. But Matthew Dellavedova played well. Malcolm Brogdon wound up winning the Rookie of the Year. I still contend that the only reason that happened was because Joel Embiid didn't play most of the second half of the season. But whatever, Malcolm Brogdon won the Rookie of the Year. And then all of it is encompassed with Giannis, the great Giannis Antetokounmpo, who top five player in the NBA, or is that too far to say?
No, he's not five.
Ten?
Yeah.
Okay. just based on potential. 23 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. I mean, almost 2 blocks, more than 1.5 steals. Field goal percentage is sky high. The only thing that worries me with Giannis is that, and the other thing about the Jabari point that you made, that is a legitimate like gripe. The only thing that bothers me about that is that at the end of that Toronto series, they were so reliant on Giannis to make plays that he just ran out of gas.
Oh, it was like LeBron.
It was like watching a horse just get shot in the leg.
No, you know? It was the first time we saw LeBron in Cleveland, and he had nobody around him, and they're just like, do something. He's like, I don't know what to do, and nobody could do anything because, again, like I said, you have positionless basketball, and it gets a lot harder in the playoffs.
I like their potential in terms of that concept. I think the athletic positionless basketball can be, especially if they can continue to improve on defense, which they were definitely curving towards at the end of the year. I think that can work against a team like Golden State, like a super duper offense that plays fast. I think a really slow paced team like Milwaukee, they were 26 in pace last year, that can do the defensive efficiency, block shots, get the steals. You have a leader at the wing spot or the power forward spot who can, you can interchange between the 3 and the 4 and make all the offensive plays. I think teams like that can frustrate those really good offensive teams. It's like Memphis, only you add the athleticism to it.
Okay. Yeah, you have athleticism, but let's flip it a bit and let's talk about the egos.
Okay.
What is it going to do when you have the whole entire time with, hey, Kyrie, come over here. We'll give you Middleton and Brogdon. They're available. We're openly trying to, here's our guys. We're going to get rid. What's going to happen to them now? Are they going to come in, firing on all cylinders? Or is it going to be a little damaging, as it seems to be with a lot of players?
I think a lot of teams are trying to get Kyrie Irving. And it's one of those things where, if that's the case, then there's a lot of NBA couples out there that need to have some making up to do. I mean, Denver was trying to get him. Phoenix was trying to get him, you know.
Yeah, but nobody mentioned names. Milwaukee is the only team of, here's our offer. Mm-hmm. This is a public offer. Here you go. here's Malcolm. He was a rookie of the year. He'll fit in great with you. And, we might be a third team for Melo.
Is this an example of the two-owner system where one owner thinks it's a great idea and the other might not, where you get all that miscommunication and then you throw out something like that in public and it just kind of blows up in your face? Do you think that two-owner system works, or the multiple-owner system works?
No, not really.
I mean, it's their money that they want. I mean, look, Leslie Alexander is going to make a whole shit ton of money selling the Houston Rockets, but
it's their money, and everybody has tons of minority people, but you need one spokesman if you have this duopoly here. And one's on vacation. No, he'll agree with me. He'll sign off on what I'm saying. You just need one mouthpiece for the owners. It doesn't matter if there's two or one or 20. It's just, like Milwaukee always just seemed too many cooks in the kitchen. Of the same thing with the GM of, this is going to be the GM. The other owner doesn't seem to like him. Okay, he's, in Orlando now. And, here's our backup guy. And it's just a lot of, I don't want to say shadiness, but business going on.
Yeah, I don't think front office embattlement, like you were mentioning, was not the reason for the inactivity in the offseason. I think you hit it on the head, is that they just didn't have the money. One of the very first signings they did right off the deadline was re-sign Tony Snell so that they didn't have to deal with the restricted free agency there. He started a lot of games. The only problem I have with Snell is that even though he's a true two, which is rare to find now, and he plays some defense, is that he will always be your worst player of your starting five. But if you want to pay him, pay him. And if you think he fits well, then good for you. Chris Middleton bounced back really well in February from the torn hamstring. The only shame of it is that he came back right after Parker got hurt, so we didn't see the Bucks in their true talent blossom. But they did play well without Parker, like you mentioned. Monroe played well in his first taste of the playoffs. We mentioned Brogdon. Dellavedova's a decent defensive backup point guard type of guy. A lot of different pieces here, like we were talking about.
They were also inactive because their biggest roster move was cutting and stretching Spencer Hawes because they wanted to be out of the luxury tax, which they were in.
Yeah, because I think the deadline for that luxury tax where Hawes' salary would kick in was at like the beginning of September, so they had to let him go. The stretch deadline where you could use it was at the end of August, so they had to do it.
Yeah, so that's the reason you're inactive, and that's why I said Jabari Parker wants 110 million. Good luck finding it on that roster.
Go ahead.
Well, with the exception of getting rid of Monroe, you just have all these sort of pieces, and well, again, they played better without him. And, you know, we had the same curious case in Miami with Justice Winslow of, well, what's going to happen if your once centerpiece is now an accessory?
Well, I will say this. Sometimes that can work in your favor where if you don't have the ability – I mean, the Clippers tried to do this and they failed because they just didn't have the depth. But when you don't have the ability to gain the assets because of the cap space or whatever, you have to dig into your own bag of goodies and find something. I mean, like Washington is in this situation with Ian Mahimi where they got to dig in and get something out of what they already have. The Bucks at least have a few of those pieces, like John Henson, Mirza Teletovic, even Dellavedova, guys who have underwhelmed so far, but they have the potential to do something for them if they put them in a good position.
And I will bring it up again. They got so lucky by getting rid of Plumlee and his horrible...
Miles Plumlee, yeah.
4-year, $40 million or something of that. A horrible contract, so... You know, again, the questionable signings lead us to now you're maxed out with cap space. The Snell deal, you know, like you said, like, oh, he's the worst player, but they only gave him, what was it, 48 maybe?
Let me 44? Take a look here. I can look at it right now. Give me just a second. It was 4 years, $46 million.
Yeah, so they didn't break the bank for him. 46, okay, that's sort of the new NBA money of, well,
yeah,
you're...
It sounds right when you think about it. Now in the new NBA South.
He's a player that fits that system. He works well within his confines. Okay, well, yeah, he's going to be the worst starting two or three or four on that team, depending upon what day it is.
So basically, you're literally getting the same team. Very athletic, defensive potential. Rebounding is just... They got to do it. They're dead. They were second to last in rebounding.
And that's the problem with such an athletic team. There's no reason they shouldn't be tops.
They're always out of position. Guess what happens when you have positionless basketball? You're always out of position.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. They won 42 games. Their over-under is 47.5. So Vegas is kind of thinking the same way a lot of casual NBA fans thinking, you know, Giannis will, you know, do a little better after being most improved player and bring him up a bit. I still say under. I mean, I'm not saying 50 wins is like this unattainable goal, but I mean, Adam, we're in like right above the middle tier. I mean, getting 50 wins out of this tier is going to be very hard.
I'm gonna say under, even though it is the East and they should easily pound on a lot of that fodder on the bottom. It's just you have to sort of be leery of that sophomore slump from Brogdon.
Mm-hmm. That's I agree with that, too. But, I mean, Brogdon kind of came out of nowhere as a second rounder. I just mentioned Thornwell for the Clippers. Like, some of these guys, they just fit well, you know, and that's what Brogdon was. He just had a nice big body for a guard, and he just slipped in really nicely. He struggled in the playoffs, though, but he's a rookie. He gets that caveat. Let's just move on to the New Orleans Pelicans. Adam, just start. You know where I am with the Pelicans. I'm from New Orleans. This is my team.
I will spare the easy health-related joke. And the problem with the Pelicans is you're either a point guard or a center on this team. Mm-hmm. There's no two, there's no three, and there's no four.
Forwards. They're only small forward now that Solomon Hill has a torn hamstring, basically the same injury Chris Middleton had. So whatever Chris Middleton's timetable is, that's Solomon Hill's. If you're being optimistic – our only small forwards are Darius Miller, and we're trying desperately to make room cap-wise to get away from the hard cap to sign back Dante Cunningham, which is not official.
Dante Cunningham, Shabazz Muhammad, and the report is they brought in Josh Smith for a look.
I totally forgot about Shabazz Muhammad because they rescinded his offer after they got Butler. You're right.
Yeah, and it's just like, well, you got nobody who could shoot a three on that team, and if you're going for the slowest pace and just, you know, this team should make the Memphis ground and pound just look like...
Well, look like, Alvin Gentry does not do slow pace. I mean, they were even with Cousins and even with half of the season having Boogie Cousins and Anthony Davis, they still were ninth in pace. That's just how he likes to coach. But maybe he's not the right coach. Maybe he won't be there by the midseason.
And that's the problem is they lose him and then they're going to lose... potentially they could lose Cousins at the end of the year. And it's just, well, I think we could just sum
just
up.
Just tell me they're going to suck. Just tell me they're going to suck. That's all you have to say.
We don't need to get into depth with him a lot, but it's hard to, you know, it's like poker. You a big poker player?
No. You'd probably be in poker.
You a poker watcher on ESPN?
Sometimes.
Okay. So you know when somebody goes all in, and then you got somebody right behind him who goes all in over on top of him, and then there's a third guy behind him who goes all in again. So you're just like, wait a minute, I went all in. I'm supposed to be the guy here. And then you just have teams like Oklahoma City and Houston, and everybody just leapfrogs them of stocking up.
So you're saying the boogie trade for New Orleans was like Project Zero, and then they had improved trades upon that that were of the same nature.
It's just, yeah, they got better, and they were like, this team might be a force now. How are you going to deal with two bigs? You know, well, what about chemistry and positions? No. Talent will overcome that. Then all of a sudden, everybody else is like, fuck chemistry. Fuck positions. What is going to – all-stars can play with all-stars.
Yeah, let's just bring Isaiah Thomas here. He'll be fine. You know, I'm not trying to dog the Cavaliers. They're like the best team in the league. We're going to get – or the second best team in the league. Drew Holiday, let's just end it with this. Was he worth it? Was he worth the max extension?
No, and yes. Yes, you had to sort of offer it because look at the drop off after him. Mm-hmm. You would be in the George Hill category.
Jeff Teague was already off the board too. So if you're just looking at it timing wise,
you know, you want George Hill, Jeff Teague, and you know, then below that is Darren Collison. You're like, do you really want to go down that low? But also Drew Holiday, if you want to help your team, what happened to you? Like, you know, I'll take 120 or I'll take, oh, you're going against a hard cap. I'll take a, you know, like Giannis. Oh yeah. I'll take 5 million off. I'll do a team friendly deal.
If you're winning championships yet, like Kevin Durant is, yeah, that's reasonable. But if you're Drew Holiday and you want to get paid, even though your team might be on the cusp of the playoffs, or you might be playing on probably your best team that you've ever played with, you want to get paid.
Yeah. That's the thing, is he got paid and now this team has no bench because he got paid.
Okay, Ajinka and Ashik, this is a yearly question. Can they move the contracts?
No, they can move Ajinka, who has some talent and good. Ashik, we're not going to talk about...
Non-guaranteed 2019, but guaranteed...
$3 million.
Yeah, guaranteed this year.
It's guaranteed for $3 million. He has... His last year is for $3 million. Mm-hmm. So he has like another year and a half. But yep. The thing about Ashik is... He wasn't out at the end of last year because he sucked. He was out because he had horrible food poisoning in Mexico and couldn't, and he lost like, what was it, like 20, 30 pounds or something?
He literally looked like a cancer patient.
Yeah, so maybe he might come back faster. Yes. He might come back a little quick pep in his step that he didn't have. Mm-hmm. That's the sort of the hope for it, but again...
That is some incredibly optimistic hope right there.
But again, you have Frank Jackson, who just had foot surgery. Why are you letting him play basketball 2 months later?
I don't understand that. He had to get people going on this one. They traded Tim Frazier so that they could get a second round pick. Well, they traded. They had to make a trade and give some cash away to move up in the second round, and they took Frank Jackson, who had played well in the combine, but then the report came out that he had shut himself down because he got like a crack in his foot. Well, he was playing again 2 months later and then re-broke the foot. It's kind of the same timeline Kevin Durant had when he broke his foot, where he had a crack or a fracture, then he let it try to heal up on its own, came back, broke it, and then he had to get the surgery and he was out for the rest of the season. Frank Jackson, Lord knows when he'll be back. I would have to assume by like the All-Star break. But yeah, you just lost your one rookie.
It's just that, you know... apparently, maybe the Saints did the right thing by firing them.
It's called the Ochsner curse. I don't know if Ochsner is a national hospital network, but Ochsner is the – me and my friends joke about this all the time, but it's now become like a true reality, is that the medical staff of New Orleans is – the whole professional franchise is the Saints and the Pelicans, whose stadium and dome, the Superdome, right next to each other. The medical staffs are garbage. You know, Eric Gordon was the one who kind of sounded off on the Pelicans, throwing a lot of shade at their medical staff when they interviewed him after he had joined the Rockets. And, you know, there's not that – there is credence there, you know. And
Eric Gordon did it. Tyreek did it.
Anthony
Every
Davis has
Saints
never
player
played longer than what, 63 games in a regular season. That's unbelievable. That's a fucking all-star, man. You know?
It's unfortunately the Pelicans have to go the under. I don't even know what the number is,
The number on the Pelicans is 39.5. I will, because I'm the ultimate optimist for my Pelicans, I will go over. I will say they'll be knocking on that door. They'll be competing with Denver for that last playoff spot, or either Denver or someone below Denver for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference to keep it interesting. There are some interesting things here, like Etuan Moore, Jordan Crawford coming off of they got him off of waiver wire. He played well at the end. Chick Diallo was interesting. He played well in summer league. And then there's Rajon Rondo. Just tell me, is Rajon Rondo equal to Tim Frazier and Quinn Cook?
Rondo is, for everybody who hates him, Rondo is good when Rondo wants to be good, as we saw in Chicago. Yeah. If he didn't break his, whatever it was, was it hand or finger?
I think it was like his wrist or thumb. I don't even remember.
Yeah, if he didn't break that, they would have won easily. He was, he was, criticizing teammates. Y'all are lazy. Who do you think you are? And, Wade's like, yeah, actually, Rondo's right. Whereas everyone's, whoa, how can he say this? And it's just like, obviously this is probably his last stop. And once he burns his bridge here, it'll be the Chinese league for him, because he's not going to start accepting lower and lower money and be on a veteran's minimum because you keep burning bridges. But it's, again, where him and Drew Holiday, where's the spacing going to come? Where's the shooting going to come?
Yeah. The only – I'm glad you asked that. I was just going to talk about it. I think Ian Clark might get a little bit of blow as like a three-point shooter. You might see a little bit of playing time for him. He's one of the very rare ones that kind of wound up being the odd man out of the Warriors championship when they, because even though they won the championship, they still made some additions, and Ian Clark wound up and James Michael McAdoo wound up being out of the mix, but Clark landed in New Orleans. So I hope he works out for us. Maybe that championship rub. You think so? Okay.
Moving on, Portland.
Let's talk about the Portland Trailblazers.
Okay. What have they done?
Right at it, huh?
This team is the definition of how they squandered all that money.
Made no additions. They literally made a subtraction. They basically told Brooklyn, look, you wanted Alan Crabb last year. We matched the offer sheet. That was our bad. You can have him now.
No. Our goal is to have our entire team under salary for 4 or 5 years so they grow as a team and they'll be better. No, you signed 5 players who are all the same. You got Lillard and McCollum who are the same player.
So you're seeing the shadow of the 2016 Neil O'Shea apocalypse is still raining down on him, even though Neil O'Shea, the GM, got an extension.
Because, again, I guess if you're Portland, look at what every other GM in the East sort of did. Mm-hmm. If you look at Orlando, look at Chicago.
Talk about with the Boogie deal. If you look at the Boogie deal, everyone's like, New Orleans got away with murder. No, the fucking Thunder got away with murder. The Cavs, I don't want to say got away with murder, but the Cavaliers got a lot. You know what I'm saying?
But hey, we like Crabb and we like Turner and we like Mo Harkless. Well, let's just get all three.
Sign Myers Leonard, even though he's proven nothing.
Yeah, let's get him. Why not? Oh, do we need a center? No. We got Noah Vonleh. He's good, right?
Wait. So weird that the one move that they made that actually worked out for him was not a signing or wasn't anything related with a signing. It was a trade. It was getting Yosef Nurkic in exchange for Mason Plumlee.
Yeah, that was a panic trade on Denver, and they basically screwed Denver out.
That's why they gave him the first-round pick. They were trying to get rid of Nurkic because Nurkic was a malcontent. He didn't want to be in Denver anymore. But boy, yeah. He could be in Portland once he got some playing time. He looked great.
And then all of a sudden, oh my God, our defense is horrible. Well, we need to draft Zach Collins and then Caleb Swanigan. So let's just get two players who play the same position again. And no. This team just would have been better off just saying, let's just pay Batum.
Okay. Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum. Now McCollum's money kicks in this year at $23 million per year. Damian Lillard always makes the max. That's your backcourt of the future. We've already talked ad nauseum about the issues with that Portland backcourt, is that even though they're great offensively, they can be your leaders defensively. Just total sieve because they're always undersized. Mo Harkless, decent. I think he's overrated. Al Aminu, I think, is a good player. When he got injured early in the year and they didn't have him, it definitely showed where their defense in the middle was just bad.
Al Aminu is decent, but again, who was the one who drafted him when he was at the Clippers? That's right. No wonder. Oh, no, we need to keep Aluminu. He's great. No, he's decent. It's just...
You also had a note about Neil O'Shea with the Clippers that was not related to Aluminu, but I thought it was kind of funny about the number one pick that wound up going to the Cavaliers in 2011.
He was the one who gave away Baron Davis.
And they gave him the number one pick. It's basically the same thing Denver did for Portland. Neil O'Shea was probably looking at this deal like, huh, I've seen this before. Neil O'Shea traded Baron Davis and gave their first round pick to Cleveland in order to get rid of Baron Davis's contract. That pick became the number one pick that Cleveland used to pick Kyrie Irving with.
Yep. So this is the GM you're giving away those luxury tax payments to, and then. Again, you gave away Crabb, but you had to cut and stretch Nicholson, who they got in return, who's going to be on the books for 7 years.
Yeah, so you're saying that, you know, when they had the vanishing, as I call it, in 2015 when they lost, or was it 2015 or was it 2014? It was 2015 when they lost Aldridge, they lost Batum, they lost Wes Matthews. You're saying that they should have probably tried harder to retain some of those guys instead of leaving the slate clean. Saying that we're going to build on this and then re-signing and overpaying, like, overrated players.
Well, is Batum the best player? No, but would you rather have Batum or Crabb, Turner, and Harkless for 2.5 times the money?
If you take Crabb out, I'll take that.
That's the problem, is you just have... You got too many players just to play one position, and you have no backup point guards because your point guard and your shooting guard is the same person. And you have out if Nurkic gets injured again, your team is so screwed. Just under.
Their blocked shots for as a team were very good, and this was with Nurkic for just a couple of months. I mean, I think they can still stay pretty level there, middle of the pack in rebounding. Defensively, that was their biggest hang-up, that they just were not a good defensive team. I don't think that's going to change. Their offense is always good, even though they're a low assist team, because Lillard and McCollum are constantly just chucking up shots. Didn't Lillard have a 59-point game like at the very end of the regular season? I mean, this is Russell Westbrook Jr. basically.
You bet it, pretty much.
Yeah, and so. Yeah, I mean, they had 41 wins, or 42 and a half, so Vegas actually likes them a little more than they did last year. I'll go over, because at least I know they're a good team. I'll just say that. I know they're a good team. Whereas with New Orleans, I'm really not sure. With the next team we're talking about, I'm really not sure. But I think the Trailblazers, even without Crabb and making zero additions other than Caleb Swanigan and Zach Collins, I think they're still a pretty good team.
Yeah, they're...
And Caleb Swanigan did look good in summer league.
He overachieved, but he's just going to be one of those, like, energy guys who... It would be good if he, you know, becomes an all-star and develops into something, but I just don't see him putting that, you know, 35 minutes a game.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to miss Festus Ezeli and Tim Quarterman. Not trying to be jokingly, but they literally got nothing out of them. All right, the Utah Jazz is the last team that we're going to be discussing on this section of the NBA season preview. Man, I mean, you got to start with the exit of Gordon Hayward. You got to just go right off the top and just ding that. How big of a loss is losing Gordon Hayward?
At first, I thought it was huge, but then after a while, it just sort of, it became what it was, as, you know, he was like, oh man, Miami's pitch was awesome, so he didn't even, he wasn't really wanting to come back.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess, you know, in the end, I'm going to say they got lucky, because this team was super old. You had Diaw, you had...
Well, they still have Joe Johnson.
You just brought all these old players.
Shelvin Mack, 26 years old. He signed with Orlando. George Hill was 30. You know.
Yeah, George Hill. Yeah, and then all of a sudden they got younger again, and they're back to being potential team. And Rubio, as you saw in Minnesota, was just horribly misplayed.
Yeah, Ricky Rubio, they basically got for nothing. Like, Minnesota dumped him because they were making the room for the Butler trade, and they wanted to sign Jeff Teague. So they basically gave Ricky Rubio to the Utah Jazz.
And how is, you know, Rubio was good, but then he get injured. Oh, the Rubio, Kurt Rambis, he's your coach. No, he's not going to be good. Oh, Thibodeau's going to be your coach.
I got to tell you, I think Quinn Snyder is a very good coach. Like, I mean, for him to be able to make lemonade out of lemons like he has in Utah is very, very good. I mean, he is one of the guys that has been straddling their cap for years is Alec Burks. He's gotten, like, literally nothing out of Alec Burks, and they've still been good. He had an injury-riddled season with Rodney Hood, got Rodney Hood to get better. They gave the extension, Kevin O'Connor, I think, is the GM there, gave the extension to Rudy Gobert. Well, Rudy Gobert blossomed. You know, he probably should have won the Defensive Player of the Year.
So that's why it doesn't hurt, because you still have a cornerstone. You have other teams who lose their star player. Who's their best backup? Nobody. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you have Gobert. Okay, we're just going to slow it down a little bit. Oh, we have a passing point guard who could just lob it up to Gobert anytime.
Well, that was
anytime.
A huge problem when Dante Exum once upon a time had torn his ACL, because their backup was Raul Neto. And they just – it couldn't work. They could not make that work. And I think that was – I think that year they just missed the playoffs. But they made the playoffs this past season, got to the second round after beating the Clippers, but then they got mercilessly swept by the Warriors, because not only that, I think George Hill missed most of that playoff series due to injury. One question I have to ask, because I questioned it immediately. Joe Ingles getting a contract extension. I wasn't a fan of it simply because of the money. I thought the money on it was huge, but I don't have the – it was 4 years and $52 million. I didn't get that. You know, the rumor was that he was friends with Hayward, so they thought that signing him up early would be the caveat to get Hayward to come back, but I think that was BS.
And, you know, if he's going to be the glue guy and just sort of the –
Well, that's his job. His job is just to be like a corner three man. He had a really great game against the Clippers. I remember one of those games. I think it was game four, where if he didn't play well, they would have lost the series. So, I mean, he's a very good glue guy. Alec Burks, do they get anything out of Alec Burks?
That's the thing, is you're relying on Burks and Hood. And just quickly on Ingles is, yeah, he's the glue guy, 3D. The difference between him and Damari Carroll in Toronto was, you know, Ingles, he's working in Utah, and whereas Carroll couldn't be that 3-and-D guy and sort of got miscast. So, yeah, you pay him, but if he fits in that system, it's no problem. Did they overpay him? Was there really that much of a market? No, but if you need somebody to space out, you know, your Favors and Hood and to be on that court and provide something, okay, I got no problem with it.
The Dante Exum, Donovan Mitchell experiment is officially on now. Mitchell and Exum both looked really good in the Utah version of Summer League, because they play the games in Utah as well. Looked pretty good in Vegas too. Mitchell has gotten rave reviews in terms of his athleticism. Kind of like – I'm trying to find a decent comparison to him off the top of my head. I'm trying to think of like a wide body guard who's really athletic. You know, it's kind of in that mold. But Exum, this is his time. I think he could probably – at 21 years old, I think he could probably blossom, but it's now or never.
And that's sort of the where, unfortunately, where Rubio's at is. If Axum starts to shine, okay, Rubio is going to be slowly pushed to the door like he was in Minnesota.
Yeah. Are you going to miss Jonas Jerebko in Boston? You think he's going to do something for Utah?
He was good for what he did, just a little stretch four. He provided energy. He didn't, you know, he wasn't filling the stat sheet, but
Boston fans loved him because he was like, kind of like Ingles was, a glue guy.
Just if all you could do is just provide hustle for when you're called
in. But you
can't
have two glue guys. That's too much glue. It starts to kind of leak out. It starts to show.
But in the end, it just, this team hinges on Favors. He was injured last year and looked terrible. If he's healthy,
looked good against the Clippers though in Game 7 when they didn't have an answer after Griffin got hurt.
If he's healthy and this team is healthy, it's good. Vegas is sort of bullish on them, which what's their over under, like 40.5? Yeah, I think I got to take the over on that, because as good as Hayward was, you can move pieces around and let's just rely more on Gobert. Okay, now it's Gobert's team, not Hayward's team. So, okay.
By going over, I'm saying as a better, that I'm doubling down that Snyder can kind of like conjure up another good year. I think he's a good coach, but I think this one is going to be a little bit more tumultuous in terms of being able to get to 40 wins. So I'm going to go under, but not by much. Like, I think they'll be like 39 and 43. I think they're still going to be a very good defensive team. I don't think that's going to change. That was their mantra last year. But man, Hayward being gone is just, it's a significant loss. I mean, that's an all-star that you lost, you know, and I'm not, and I don't want to say you got him for nothing, because you made additions with Yurebko and and we didn't even mention Tabo Cephalosha. And Ekpe Udo is going to kind of help out inside on, so that Gobert can at least get a little bit of time off the court and they don't get destroyed in the middle. But I just feel like with Utah, that's just a little, that's asking a little too much for a team that's immediately removed from losing their best player. Would you agree that Hayward was their best player, or would you say it was Gobert?
Oh, Hayward was, because he was a complete,
A finished product.
Yes.
Okay. All right, and that's kind of finishing up for the teams. Let's just do a very, very quick ranking system of the six teams. So we talked about the Jazz, the Pelicans, the Nuggets, the Bucks, the Blazers, and the Clippers. Let's just go from the bottom here of these teams. Which team do you think will be the worst of this crop?
Portland?
I say the Clippers. I think this one might have the most variance between you and me.
Probably, because as we mentioned at the top, these teams could all do really well or really bad, and they could all just implode. It's just a curious case here.
For below the LA Clippers, I have the Utah Jazz.
Pelicans.
So New Orleans Pelicans you have there. I have the Pelicans after above the Jazz. What do you have?
Actually, I'd put the Pelicans below the Blazers, and okay. I'd put the Clippers above them.
Okay, so you have the Pelicans last, like as the worst of this.
Yeah.
Yikes. Even though you're screaming under for the Portland Trail Blazers, and you're telling me the Pelicans are going to be worse. Thanks a fucking lot.
It's kind of hard when everybody's already injured.
So you have New Orleans, up then Portland, and then you said Utah or the Clippers?
Clippers.
The Clippers. You like Utah more than the Clippers?
I would say it's the same thing again. They're just going to battle out the same.
I had them as my bottom, and I had the Pelicans. Then I had Portland as the third best team of this crop. My second best one is Denver. My best one is Milwaukee.
Yeah, I have that as well, the top two.
But you really like Denver.
I'm really, because at some point you have to take the potential of one team over the potential of another team. And a lot of teams, this seems to be the year, you know, Cousin Jamal gets everything together. Because after All-Star break, he was just a stat-filling machine.
I was looking at a highlight of him on, because, you know, NBA.com does a great job of just like throwing together montages during the offseason. Murray's got a really funny like release game, but he gets a lot of shots to go in, you know?
He gets them off, and he's not like athletic, but he's sneaky fast.
He's very lateral. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. But he's good. He's a good player. Juan Hernan Gomez, Juancho, I got to see it. I got to see it first. I know people –
it's too
spotty. I know the stat heads, the efficiency stat heads love him, but I got to see it. You know,
and that's that has love, but he's not a three; he's a four.
Yeah,
and you know, Chandler. It's okay; it's his time now. And
so, Denver's your team to watch, your official team to watch of this crop. I have Milwaukee as my team to watch.
They're also a team to watch, but I think for different reasons.
Okay, team that could bottom out.
Milwaukee
Clippers. I think the Clippers could just be lottery.
Yeah, but I thought people sort of already expect that.
I'm just glad you spared the Pelicans. MVP candidates, of course, Anthony Davis. Another one would have to be. I don't think Rudy Gobert can go that far. I mean, I'm not saying he's Mark Eaton. I'm not going to peg him like that. But I don't think he's the kind of center that could just be the absolute stalwart of your team. Would you agree with that?
I think he could if he, you know, now that there's a point guard who will pass to him, I think he potentially, or just, okay, fine, MVP will be Giannis.
Giannis, yeah, that's the other one.
There's no reason he shouldn't be destroying everybody this year.
And then the other one was Blake, but if Blake's coming right off of an injury and he comes in later, I'm not sure how much traction he can get. But I mean, listen, Blake got the max money. I don't even have in front of me. I think it's like $30 million a year at least. This is his time. I mean, this is his team now. It's kind of like what happened with Mike Conley, where the Grizzlies said, look, we're not changing the team completely, but we're going to make you the star of the team. And that's kind of what happened with Blake Griffin with the Clippers when they lost CP3. They said, okay, you're the man. It's your team. Like, do you think it's going to be that different?
No. Okay. I think it's just like you said.
Yep. And I think that's going to be finishing up. The crop above this one is – I mean, we got a lot to go with that because these are teams that are really, like we were talking about, with all the big stars.
Well, this is number 10, so next up is the spoilers.
We're dipping into the top 10, but what I'm saying is that we're talking about teams that have spent the offseason doing some loading up because we had a lot of star-laden trades. So you're going to see some teams here that on paper last year did not look so hot, but now going in, you got a lot more ammunition than you originally thought you did. So a little bit more hot sauce on the next bun. But I thought there was a lot of good stuff here. I think there's a lot. Some of these teams, like, you know, the Jazz are interesting, but I mean, Denver, Milwaukee, even the Pelicans, as crazy as they are, could be good. I mean, there's just a lot.
They're all going to be watchable for different reasons.
Yeah, league pass level. I would agree with that, you know. And I'm not trying to poo-poo on the tiers below them. I think there's some really fun little nuggets in there too, no pun intended. But and you know, just a nice little mishmash here. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reach. We're gonna be continuing this preview, and we'll see y'all again. Take care.